sisters on a journey, singing now as one, remembering the ancient ways, the women and the wisdom, the women and the wisdom.
Green blessings and welcome. This is Susan Weed, the voice of the Wise Woman Tradition, bringing you the Wise Woman Way radio show on Women's Radio. It's time for us all to make a change. Each week, you'll be here with me to discover outstanding wise women and men who are making waves and making change. Join me as together we reweave the healing cloak of the ancients, helping you to reclaim your health and well-being through personal empowerment, the Wise Woman Way. Green blessings from Susan Weed. I am so thrilled to welcome Sally Fallon on my show. Sally is one of those dear friends we hardly ever talk to each other, but we are sisters of the heart. Sally, I'm so glad to have you here with me.
Oh, thank you, Susan. You know, it has been a long time, and you're absolutely right. We're soulmates.
Sally Fallon received her bachelor's degree in English with honors from Stanford University, and then a master's degree in English writing with high honors from my alma mater, UCLA, where I was also an English and mathematics major. Mrs. Fallon,
you know what? I'm my mouth is open because I had a math minor in college, and there's not many of us like that.
Mrs. Fallon is president of the Weston A. Price Foundation, and that's westonaprice.org. Also the editor of the foundation's fantastic quarterly magazine, and the author of one of my favorite books in the entire world, Nourishing Traditions Cookbook. Sally, let me ask you, what caused you to write the Nourishing Traditions Cookbook?
Well, several things came together at one. First of all, I love to cook. Secondly, I had read Dr. Price's wonderful book in the early 70s and subjected my own children to an experiment where I fed them according to these principles, and the results were wonderful. They were really healthy. So I wanted to put those two things together. I wanted to do a cookbook that was practical and that made Dr. Price's findings available to the public, more public-friendly, more reader-friendly.
You succeeded.
Thank you.
You succeeded very, very beautifully. So, Weston Price, can you tell us a little bit about
Weston Price was a dentist. He had a very busy, active practice in the 20s, 30s, and 40s in Cleveland, Ohio, and he got the idea to travel to remote parts of the globe to look at people's teeth. He was very interested in dental health, and he wanted to know what kind of diet supported excellent dental health, and by that he meant no cavities and no crooked or crowded teeth, and by inference then excellent overall health. And he did find 14 cultures with beautiful cavity-free teeth and naturally straight teeth in every member of the tribe or village. And so then he looked at the diets. Now, the diets were all very different. Some had dairy products. Some in the frozen north had fish and game. And some in the tropics had a lot of plant foods. But he did find underlying characteristics. And the main one was that these diets were very high in three particular vitamins, A, D, and K, which are the vitamins that we get from all the foods we're told not to eat. We get them from egg yolks and butter and whole milk and organ meats like liver. We get them from caviar. We get them from oily fish and shellfish. So the very high cholesterol, high fat foods that we're being told to avoid were the foods considered the most important in these traditional cultures.
So this, what you said that you subjected your children to this, these dietary precepts that Weston Price didn't make up but found. And this is what attracted me to Weston Price's work, was that in looking at nutrition, there were so many people who were telling me what they thought would be a good diet. Weston Price was the only person I found who actually said to me, I just went out and looked for people who had healthy diets, and this is what they are.
It's the schemes that people come up with. And I always like to say, you know, these blood type diets or metabolic typing diets, these were all thought up by men who never had to cook meals day after day for a large family who were all different blood types and metabolic types. The food you put on the table, your job is to make it nourishing and nutritious, and their job is to eat it.
There you go.
And this business of giving everyone a different meal, no way, no way.
No, especially not in a traditional diet.
Heavens no, and that's the whole point of being human. Humans have a very different relationship to food than animals do. We cook it, we manipulate it in certain ways, usually to make it easier to digest, and it's got a social ritual type of concept attached to it, and that means eating the foods together, the same foods together.
Yes, mm-hmm. Not everybody having their separate little...
Exactly, or eating while you're working, or eating while you're walking. You know, it's eating is something that is infused with tradition, memory, and all of that makes it more digestible, more nourishing for us.
Literally more nourishing. So let's talk about some more specifics of this diet in terms of, you said that the diet's varied. From place to place, does that mean that there's no food that's bad or no food that's good?
It means that we need to look at every food in the context of its culture. The cultures that were using dairy products, these were not pasteurized, homogenized dairy products. These were raw or fermented dairy products from grass-fed cows. Another really good one to look at is soy, because we have been a voice warning people about the dangers of these modern soy foods. But in the context of an Asian diet and prepared the way it's prepared in Asian diets and consumed that way, which is, by the way, very small amounts, then soy is okay in the diet. So once you lift a food out of its culture and try to do something different with it, it's probably not going to be good.
There's also, I think, certain activities that go along with these foods. That if you're eating a lot of dairy products, you're probably outside a lot because you are following grazing animals.
Well, that's a good point. That's a very good point. Or you're definitely milking animals, for sure. Dairying peoples tended to be very good at routine.
Yes. I have to milk my goats every 12 hours.
That's right. That's right. Not everybody can do that.
Yeah, no holidays, no rain days,
ice
days.
Goats are always making milk.
Yeah, I mean, I have sometimes crawled out to the barn because they can't wait.
You know, Susan, another really good example, a thing I like to stress over and over, the cultures that ate meat, and many of these cultures did eat meat, did not eat lean meat. They all had the same food combining rule, which is that the meat was always eaten with the fat. And in hunting cultures where the hunting was good, they would throw the lean meat away. They saved the fat and always ate that with the meat. Now, this goes completely contrary to everything that we're being told today. But there's actually a very good reason for it, because the vitamin A in the fat helps you digest the meat. And lean meat can be very, very depleting.
I have been told the same thing about dairy products.
Exactly.
That there's a substance in the fat of the dairy product that makes it digestible.
It's the glycosphingolipids. And
ooh, she knows the name of it. Yeah. Right.
And there was a study done with children and the elderly, and they found that there was 5 times more incidence of diarrhea, intestinal problems in low-fat milk compared to whole milk.
This is Susan Weed on Women's Radio talking to Sally Fallon, the author of Nourishing Traditions Cookbook, one of my favorite books, not just my favorite cookbook, one of my all-time favorite books. Plus, you have 2 new DVDs out.
I do. I did a DVD of my seminar, and that's a 5-hour DVD. It goes from the principles to the practice of healthy food. And then I did one called The Oiling of America, which is about the whole phony cholesterol business. And both of those are available at
wisewomanbookstore.com for these great DVDs. You know, we've been talking about Weston Price's book, Nutrition and Human Degeneration.
Physical degeneration,
yes. Thank you. And if somebody doesn't want to read the book, And it's not like a stirring novel in terms of reading it, then I highly recommend that they get your Nourishing Traditional Diets DVD seminar, because basically what you do is you show us the photographs that he took and tell us what he did and how he found these things out.
Right.
It's a brilliant seminar. Even after having read the book, I felt like I learned a lot from watching this DVD.
Thank you, Susan.
And well, it's a lot of information, in fact, that he found out.
It's a lot of information. It's a very weighty book that's written in a somewhat old-fashioned style. And, yes, I think people mostly need some kind of summary. And then they need to have their hands held a little bit. How do I get from what Dr. Price said to modern times? Because a lot of the foods that these people were eating, you know, have a very large yuck factor, liver and cod's heads and shark livers and sea worms and things. So you definitely have to step up to foods that are going to be acceptable to children.
When children are confronted with foods that aren't acceptable to us, one of the delights of these indigenous diets is that this is what the children ate. They didn't ask for anything else because
there was no choice.
There just wasn't any choice at all. Now, as I understand from what I have read in Weston Price and what I've learned from you, the basic problem with the fat in the meat that most people eat is that those animals have been fed corn.
They've been fed corn and they've been fed antibiotics.
And that changes the nature of the fat.
It changes the nature of the fat, and the fat does store pesticides and so forth. So we have been big advocates of reconnecting with a local farm, a farmer who's doing things on grass. And we have local chapters who help you find these farms, like your farm, all over the country.
Farms all over the country. You know, Sally, you and I talked about and went forth into the world, what, like 15 years ago, to say to people, eat meat.
Like crazy women.
Like crazy women going, eat meat, you know?
Yes, right.
And we did this because we love animals. And people look at me and go, what? And I go, 25 years of vegetarianism in this country did nothing for animals.
No.
And I was part of that because I really do love animals. And I realized that ignoring animals wasn't the way to help them.
Yeah.
And I think that we have made enormous changes in what's available to people.
I think so. The availability of raw milk, the availability of grass-fed meats, the availability of fermented foods. You know, we can even get broth from our farmers. We can get beet kvass. We can get the sauerkraut. So a lot of these things have really become available. You know, Susan, talking about animals, the statistic I like to give is to grow 1 acre of plant food like grain, you have to kill about 300 animals, often in very gruesome ways. To grow 1 acre of beef, you only have to kill one animal, and that's the actual cow.
Absolutely.
And if you didn't kill that cow, something else would kill it in a very painful way.
I don't know if I ever told you that one of my guides is a kind of, let's say, fictional woman who lived 30,000 years ago.
Oh, beautiful, yes.
Because I really
got chills with you saying that.
I really wanted to find out about indigenous diets.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that she said to me was that she sent me to another woman who lived 10,000 years ago, who said to me, there is a contract between humans and animals, and the animals taught us how to grow grain for them.
Oh, isn't that beautiful? Well, I heard a wonderful story about a gal who got buffalo from a local buffalo farmer. And when he was about to butcher an animal, he called up all his customers and said, we're going to butcher tomorrow. Would you say a prayer for the animal? And when he would go out into the prairie, there would always be one buffalo who had separated from the herd and was just standing there ready. Now, this shows the most amazing connection between humans and their animals. And the animals want to sacrifice themselves for us. And the ruminant animals are like step-up transformers. They take grass, which is indigestible to humans, and turn it into, and they take sunlight also, and turn it into delicious, healthy meat, organ meats, bones, milk, butterfat, and blood. Even the blood is healthy.
I'm sure that you're aware of one of my favorite charities, which is Heifer International.
Yes.
And, you know, and it's like they're right on the beam with this.
Yes.
Because basically what they say is you're not going to change anybody's life by giving them a handful of seeds.
That's right.
But you read the stories of what has happened to entire communities
yes.
when Heifer International gives them one animal.
One cow. Yes.
And, you know, they give them a pregnant cow, the cow gives birth, or they give them a pregnant goat, and then gives birth, and they
yes.
have milk, and suddenly there's
they have a herd, yes.
They have a herd, suddenly everybody in the village has health care and is going to school, and there's good potable water, and you look at that and you think, my gosh, how did they get from point A to point B just by being given one animal?
You know, we have always been dependent on animals, Susan, and you just can't get away from that fact of being in embodiment. And it's a bit of an unrealistic, almost a kind of pride that you are going to try to do something different than the way the Creator organized things to say that you're not going to eat meat or wear leather or whatever. I mean, this is just the way it's always been.
Well, when Weston Price was going around looking at traditional diets and healthy people, how many of those traditional healthy people were vegetarians?
Zero, and that was called his greatest disappointment because he had hoped to find a healthy population that didn't use animal foods, and he did not find that, and he was honest enough to say that. You know, there were varying levels of animal products in these diets, but at the very minimum they ate insects. And they went to a tremendous amount of trouble and risk to obtain the animal foods. And all of the sacred foods considered so important for pregnant women and growing children were animal foods.
Mm.
The plot thickens.
Mindy, I remember harvesting seaweed with Ryan Drummond. We're pulling up this beautiful Nereocystis kelp. And I'm looking at it and I'm saying, Ryan, do you know that there's baby lobsters in here?
Oh.
And look at all these. He says, this kelp is like the womb of the ocean, he said.
Oh.
He said, everything comes into here, and all of the little baby things grow
right there, yes.
in the kelp forest.
Yes.
I said, but Ryan, vegetarians and vegans are going to be eating the seaweed. And with a twinkle in his eye, he said, yeah, I'm making sure they get some trace animal in their diet.
Actually, only in America or only in the West where the food is fumigated and, you know, extremely sterile, is it even possible to be a vegan. Because in India and places like that, you look through a microscope at the food and it's loaded with insect parts and insect poop, and it's a great source of B12.
It is, I know, and we go, yuck.
Yeah.
All right, but as a child, that was my job, was to strain the weevils out of the rice as it cooked.
Oh, is that right? To catch them as they came to the surface, right?
Because they came to the surface. So, you know, I had my skimmer, and I was to go to the rice pot every so often and skim those weevils out of there. My daughter and I had this running joke when she was young. And I was growing like broccoli and cabbage, and sometimes it would have, you know, the frass from the caterpillars in there.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes, of course, it would have the caterpillar of the cabbage worm.
Yeah.
And she would always say, yuck, there's a worm in my food. And I would say, well, it's only ever eaten cabbage, so just think of it as an animal form of cabbage.
And
then,
and
of course,
would she eat it then?
No, she wouldn't. And then, of course, one day I went, oh, yuck, there's frass in my cabbage. And she said, just think of it as another form of cabbage. For those of you who are wondering what frass is, it's caterpillar poo-poo, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Exactly. This is Susan Weed having a great time with Sally Fallon, the president of the Weston A. Price Foundation and the author of Nourishing Traditions Cookbook and the star of two brilliant DVDs, Nourishing Traditional Diets and The Oiling of America, all available at thewisewomanbookshop.com. I remember the class that most rocked my boat with you was those slides you showed us about oils.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, I had just been kind of taught that oils were safe and good for me.
I had one person come up after my seminar and said, you know, the one that says it all is the flow chart of how vegetable oils are processed.
Mm.
Now, I explained this in the seminar, the polyunsaturated vegetable oils are very fragile. And when you process them, you are subjecting them to heat and chemicals 2 or 3 times. And then they come to you in a bottle, deodorized and bleached and everything, with a little bit of yellow color added back in. And you, then you're told to cook with these things. So every one of these steps creates free radicals. And the free radicals are not former hippies on the loose. They are really dangerous things in our bodies. And that's what causes cancer and starts the buildup of plaque in the arteries and destroys organs and destroys the brain. It's the free radicals from these vegetable oils.
Actually, free radicals, you know, are a problem for plants, too.
Oh, is that right?
Well, a plant takes in carbon dioxide,
mm-hmm.
but photosynthesis begins with carbon monoxide.
Uh-huh.
So the plant has to cleave an oxygen off, and that's what a free radical is a single unbound oxygen atom. And this is what causes plants to make such copious amounts of antioxidant vitamins.
Oh, how interesting.
They don't do it for us. They do it for them.
Them, yeah.
Because they're under huge oxidative stress,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like we are,
yes.
As well. So the oils of commerce, then, although they are being pushed as healthy, in fact are
the culprits.
The culprits of that. And now, yes. I have seen some scientific studies showing that macular degeneration is very clearly a byproduct of eating these oils.
Absolutely. And the industry that makes these oils has spent the last 60 years on a very clever campaign to get people to use these oils, getting people in white coats and government officials to tell us that they're healthy, making this part of government policy, and at the same time demonizing their competition. What's their competition? It's butterfat, lard, tallow, and coconut oil, and palm oil. And that's what they've done. And they've figured out all sorts of reasons for you not to eat these oils, everything from, you know, cholesterol to destroying the jungle.
Right, I was going to say cholesterol. Cholesterol. We're told that cholesterol is the problem with butter, and that's why we should have something other than butter, because
exactly.
The other stuff doesn't have cholesterol.
You know, cholesterol is so critical. I mean, human life, animal life is not possible without cholesterol. It forms every cell, it helps form every cell. It's very plentiful in the brain and the second brain, which is the gut. And the foods that contain a lot of cholesterol also contain things like choline, which is critical for intelligence. And cholesterol is needed to make things like estrogen and testosterone, all those good hormones. And what happens when you're not eating animal fats but eating things like trans fats, which prevent you from making estrogen and testosterone, you end up with a lot of unhappy people.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. You mean it can actually cause, like, emotional or mood changes?
It could very well. It could prevent fertility. It could prevent normal sex life, could cause all sorts of problems.
Wow.
And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing misery, you know.
Exactly these things. I'm just sitting here going, ah.
People are designed to be healthy, robust, to have good, keen minds, to have a nice, healthy, robust sex life, to enjoy their food. And we have been, what's been done to food today, making the good foods seems sinful, is the same thing that the Victorians did to sex. And when you suppress the natural instincts, whether it's for sex or for eating good food, you get pathologies. And that's what we're seeing today.
It is what we're seeing.
Yeah.
You know, in a natural diet, there are 3 things that are very difficult to get, that are scarce environmentally. And those are sugar, salt, and fat.
slump.
And so we have actually, through our evolutionary process, wound up with brains that don't have an off switch for those things.
Well, and we definitely need the salt and the fat, even sugar, and if it's, you know, in the right context, just like everything else.
Do you call somebody you love?
Well, right.
You call them your sweetie or your honey or your sugar pie. We know what sweet is. Sweet is the taste of life.
Yeah, look at mother's milk.
I was going to say, the first time I tasted mother's milk, I went, bleh! Oh, my gosh, this is so sweet.
So sweet.
Whoa.
Yeah, right.
So we're... I often say to people who say, I'm giving up sweets, I'm going, don't give up on life yet.
And same with the fats, you know.
Yes, but yeah. It's the quality of them.
It's the quality, it's the context, you know, it's all of a piece that is kind of depicts harmony with the physical world.
One of the things that you really enjoy, and I want to be sure we're coming close to the end of our time here, to talk about is fermented foods.
Yes, the fermented foods really are coming online because the fermented foods help digestion and they fill our guts with good bacteria. And as you know, we have a whole new paradigm just in the last 15 years about the human body. The old paradigm was that the digestive tract should be sterile and we needed antibiotics to kill things, and if we got bugs in there, they'd make us sick. Now we know that to be healthy, you need about 6 pounds of good bacteria lining your digestive tract. And these bacteria create vitamins, they create feel-good chemicals, they are just vital to our health. Without them, we're dead. Sterilized, pasteurized,
and preserved.
Preserved foods do not feed those bacteria, whereas if you have living sauerkraut, raw milk, raw meat, living lacto-fermented beverages, then you're always feeding those good bacteria.
Not hard to do, either, to get more ferment in your life.
Yeah, I like that. Yes, ferment is good. It keeps things bubbling along.
Bubbling along.
I like to talk about the bubble-up economy, not the trickle-down economy.
All right.
And they really are easy to make, and I do think that was one of the contributions of Nourishing Traditions. We made it easy and foolproof to make these fermented foods.
Yes, so that, you know, you just put it in your refrigerator.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about anything exploding or bubbling over or strange molds. Nourishing Traditions Cookbook by Sally Fallon makes it really easy to eat well, to eat healthily. You know, one of the things I tell people right off the top when I'm teaching them about food is the human brain is not designed to think about eating.
Yes, it's your gut that thinks about eating.
You have to think from your gut.
Your brain enjoys the food.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's confusing to the gut to be given things that look like they should be food but aren't.
Exactly, that tease them, like MSG, for example.
And a variety of other things. We could talk at great length, and I love talking at length and even shortly with you, but we have actually come to the end of our time here.
Well, it has flown by, so.
It has indeed. Susan Weed talking to Sally Fallon, who is the president of the Weston A. Price Foundation. That's West, like the direction, on, like on top of something, A, the singular article, and Price, like how much is it? WestonAPrice.org, and you can connect with Sally Fallon, and a lot of the things that we've been talking about here. Really, thank you, Sally, from the depths of my gut and my heart.
From your thinking gut and your enjoying brain.
for all the marvelous, marvelous work that you have devoted
too.
Your life to helping
you
be healthier.
Too. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, Sally. Okay. Green blessings.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Susan Weed, the voice host of the Wise Woman Tradition, bringing you the Wise Woman Way radio show on Women's Radio. Green blessings from Susan Weed.
We are sisters on